I'm Sam Edwards. I'm third generation Cure Master from S. Wallace Edwards & Sons in Surrey, Virginia. We support the Heritage Radio Network because we believe in the cause and what they're doing. They're supporting family-raised livestock, small family farms, certified humane, pasture-raised, antibiotic-free. Basically, we take the products from Heritage Foods USA and make them into Serrano-style hams, prosciutto-style hams, bacon, sausage, like my grandfather did. You can find us at SurreyFarms.com or VirginiaTraditions.com.
Welcome to Hot Grease. I'm your host, Nicole Taylor. This Heritage Radio Network program is brought to you by Sam Edwards of Surrey, Virginia. Every week on Hot Grease, we bring people back to what's great in food. Culinary traditions, cooking at home, knowing your farmer, or even growing your own food. I spotlight good food fighters and the culture of the good food movement. From chefs to tastemakers to moms on a budget. Today we'll be talking Latin grilling and the Hot Five Summer Solstice Edition. If you're listening live to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network and you have any Latin grilling questions, give us a call. Our number here in the studio is 718-497-2128. Remember the pep rally song, Fired Up? If so, start singing and assemble your grill in the studio to talk 10 countries and recipes is Lourdes Castro. Lourdes' new book is titled Latin Grilling. Lourdes, welcome to Hot Grease.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
We have to start off with cocktails. Mm-hmm. Do you agree that cocktails are more important than food when you're barbecuing?
No, not more. Equally as important.
Equally.
I wouldn't say more important, but I would say equally. The beverage is as important because you're outdoors and it gets you in the mood.
So most people are very familiar with the mojito and the margarita. And your latest book, Latin Grilling, highlights a few other Latin cocktails. Do tell.
Of the other ones?
Yeah.
Well, I have a let me first just explain a little bit about the book. When I set out to write Latin Grilling, it's really because of my love for grilling. And clearly with my Latin background, it's the kind of food that I tend to like to do. And so I started writing it in a very traditional way with the appetizers, cocktails, and, poultry, beef, and whatever. And then when I started putting them together, the recipes, and then it was like chimichurri was next to Cuban mojo. And then I thought, well, people are just going to think that all of Latin America eats this way. So instead I decided I'm going to organize it. Each chapter is going to be a different country or region with its full menu. So you really get an idea of what these... of what the flavor profiles are, what people eat in those various areas. And so, of course, in Latin America, like everywhere else, you always start off with a beverage. And so I do have, as you mentioned, the mojito, the margarita, pisco sour, which is something very traditional in Peru. Also, the Chileans have their own version of a pisco sour. And there's a little bit of a rivalry, I guess, between both countries with that.
Yeah, I think I mentioned before, I probably screwed it up in the intro. You looked at 10 countries in the book Latin Grilling, correct?
Countries or regions of Latin
regions.
America. Yeah,
okay.
Either one.
And I'll have to say my favorite cocktail that I'd never heard of, or maybe someone made it, but it was a different name. I think it's a Brazilian cocktail that's in the Brazilian
chapter. The Caipirosca.
Yeah, which is... What's the difference between that one and the
Caipirinha?
Yeah.
So, Caipirinha is probably what most people are familiar with, and it's made with cachaça. So, it's a liqueur from a sugar cane, which is called cachaça, and you make it... if you're familiar with the mojito, it's sort of similar to the caipirinha, where you just muddle some lime and sugar, and then you add the cachaça and pretty much... and some water or sparkling water, and that's about it.
So the only difference is basically the sugared liqueur.
It's the difference with the caipirosca and the caipirinha is the liqueur. The caipirosca is with vodka, whereas the caipirinha is with cachaça. I did the caipirosca because it's not that easy to find cachaça in this country for some reason.
Oh, wow, really?
So a lot of people don't know that you can do it with vodka, which is, I mean, you can get anywhere. And it's a really, really nice cocktail.
Cool. So rubs, marinades, and glazes. I'm very curious. I haven't gone through every single recipe mm-hmm. in the book. Which method is more popular in a certain region or country? In terms of rubs, do you find folks doing more rubs in Brazil or Peru? Folks are doing more marinades, or is it a combination?
I think it's a combination. I think in Latin America, there's a chart which gives you all the rubs, marinades, and glazes in the book, right? And I think if you just looked at that, you would get a nice snapshot of what the various different tastes are of Latin America. So there's a chimichurri in Argentina, which is both a marinade and it's used as a sauce. Mm-hmm. And in Cuba, the mojo is used as a marinade. It's also used as a sauce. So I think maybe the marinades that eventually translate into sauces is something that's the most...
I brought it up common. Because I know when I'm thinking about American barbecue, mm-hmm. you're thinking about regional barbecue, you know, rubs are more popular.
Oh, right, right.
So that's why I asked that question.
As opposed, this isn't really a barbecue book. It's a grilling book.
Exactly.
And so I was very careful to distinguish that because uh-huh. I know the barbecuers of this world would find offense. You know, they don't consider grilling the same as barbecuing. And so this
exactly.
is... a grilling book where you're gonna, you know, there are, depending on the cuts, it might take an hour, maybe no more than two to do it. But there's some things that just take 20 or 30 minutes on the grill. So there are certainly in Latin America barbecue style recipes in Argentina, of course, even in Cuba. My background's Cuban, which is why I reference it quite a bit. But we roast a whole pig, and that's definitely low and slow. But the book, even though I do describe that process here, it is a grilling book.
Cool. So hands down, my mm-hmm. favorite chapter in the book is the Brazilian
really?
Chapter. Yeah.
And is there any reason? I don't know.
I think I'm in love with Brazil.
Okay.
And then it also has the grilled salad in there, which I think is absolutely fabulous.
It is absolutely fabulous. And what's fabulous about that is that you don't ever have... When you're grilling outside, today's a gorgeous day, but if we still made a salad, it would probably wilt and kind of, you know, it's not going to be that crunchy, refreshing salad mm-hmm. we'd want. By grilling it, you don't have to worry about it wilting on you. So it's like,
and I also think too, I'm thinking folks who are listening, who are getting CSAs, AKA community supported mm-hmm. agriculture, mm-hmm. you get a lot of kale and you get a lot of green veggies in the summer. And you do have that whole problem of wilting, just like you said.
Yeah. And even you get tired of, or you're just not sure what to do with it.
Yeah, and sauteing gets old.
Yeah. Or roasting or whatever. And how do you, and you might want to just be cooking outdoors. And so it's a nice way of bringing those greens outside. And you could pretty much, like you mentioned, kale and mustard greens or whatever that you might be having, any green. Because yesterday I actually barbecued some bok choy. So not barbecued, I grilled it.
You
just douse it. And just for anybody who's listening, all you need to do is split it in half. Douse it with olive oil, salt, and pepper, and grill it cut side down. And that's it.
That is so funny. Last Wednesday, the Bed-Stuy CSA, we, part of our share, mm-hmm. was a baby bok choy.
Yeah. That's what I did yesterday.
Yeah, and so do you have a bok choy recipe in here?
Not in the book, no.
Yeah, I basically took baby bok choy, cut it in half, drizzled it with sesame oil, and salt and pepper.
But you know, in Peru, there's a huge, there's a big Chinese influence, big mm-hmm. Asian influence, and Japanese to some degree too. And there's a marinade that I have in a book. It's a soy, a soy-based marinade that would be beautiful to drizzle over the baby bok choy that you grilled.
Oh, okay. So, folks, listening up, if you're listening, the marinade.
Marinades
can
be used
as
sauces for sure. Yeah.
Yes, yes. So we're gonna take a quick break, folks, and come back with more Lourdes Castro, the author of Latin Grilling. Keep listening.
Following is a public service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. Join Linda Palacio for A Taste of the Past every Thursday at 12 p.m. as she indulges her curiosities about food, cooking, drinking, and dining of the past by taking a journey through culinary history. Linda interviews authors, scholars, friends, and chroniclers to learn about what was eaten, where, and how. From as long ago as ancient Mesopotamia and Rome, right up to the grazing tables and deli counters of today. The show underscores food as a lively link between present and past cultures. Again, that's Thursday at 12 p.m. on the Heritage Radio Network.
Welcome back to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. Check out our program schedule and show archives on heritageradionetwork.com. Also, remember, folks, you can subscribe to Hot Grease podcasts on iTunes if you have an MP3 player or a computer and you want to listen to all 76 shows of Hot Grease. If you're just tuning in, we're chatting with Lourdes Castro. Miss Castro is, quote, a true Latin girl who loves to cook and loves to feed family and friends. And her latest book is titled Latin Grilling. So you grew up in Miami.
Yeah.
What food instantly takes you back to the summer, steamy summers in South Florida?
What food?
Yeah.
What type of food or what food itself? Like, it's definitely going to be Cuban food. And it would be the hot summer months would have to be just grilled pork. I mean, like pork shoulder. You can throw it on the grill. I actually did that the other day, too. But, yeah, some grilled pork with some really garlicky, lime-based marinade. Yummy. Yeah.
So did your parents allow you to, prep food for the grill or either light a match and start the fire?
I didn't really grow up in a very foodie family, let's say. But food was important to us because we just got together. It was more about getting together, mm-hmm. and what we were eating was a bit secondary. But one thing that you do get in Miami is year-round grilling. And so it wasn't until I moved to New York that I realized how much I loved it because I don't have it all the time. It's something we have to do seasonally here. So down while I was growing up in Miami, you grill often, or we grilled often. And it was still during the time, it was in the 70s when lighter fluid was still around.
Yeah.
And
well, that's still around now.
Well, now it's like frowned upon. But back in the day, you would just like, douse your thing and a big flame would come. And they would allow children to actually, myself included, to do it.
Yeah, I remember that, yes.
And then, when I was a kid, I absolutely remember having that small kettle grill with that bag of charcoal that you would just light the whole entire bag. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't even take the charcoals out of the bag.
Yes.
And then douse it with lighter fluid and then turn turn on the match, that kind of stuff. The great thing about grilling, at least back then, kids can. You could just with some sort of tong or skewer or something, you can kind of do your own thing. So I do have memories as a child of doing that for sure.
That's a great story. I hope everyone has a similar memory of summer food.
And what? When I smell charcoal, that nostalgia comes right away. Burning charcoal in the neighborhood for sure.
Wow. So, Lourdes, you're a chef and a culinary teacher. Mm-hmm. What do you tell your pupils about Latin food versus Tex-Mex?
Well, the one thing I say about Latin food is that Latin America is made up of many countries and regions, just like Asia is. And it'd be wrong to say Latin food is similar, just like all Asian food is. And so the one word that I use to describe Latin food is vibrant. It might be fiery. It might not. It might be garlicky. It might not. But it's going to be vibrant in flavor. Tex-Mex, and I wrote a Mexican cookbook, not a Tex-Mex cookbook, but Tex-Mex is the, it's more of an... I'm going to say it's an immigrant type of food, but it's like Italian-American food is different than Italian food, and mm-hmm. it's wonderful. Italian-American food is delicious, but it's different than what you would eat if you're in Italy. Same as Tex-Mex versus Mexican food or even Latin-American food. Southwestern food is the same thing. It's like, it's more fiery, I would say. It's probably more focused on that than just a general type of Latin American type of food.
Speaking of other books, you have two additional titles. One is called Eat, Drink, Think in Spanish. Mm-hmm. And the other one is titled, Mexican. Simply Mexican.
That's the Mexican book.
Yeah. So tell me about I'm really intrigued by the Eat, Drink, Think in Spanish. Is it just like a companion with words that are...
It's a great book. It's a Spanish-English dictionary of culinary terms. And And it's really, the title is Spanish, English, English, Spanish, because the book, on the first half of the book, it's words in English translated to Spanish, and then the back of the book is Spanish to English. And it's any type of culinary word or phrase or dish that you might need translated. And I wrote it because I needed that tool, because I work a lot. There was a time that I was working with a lot of Spanish chefs, and what a lot of people may not, you know, I guess realize is that while the Spanish language is like the English language, that depending on the country you're from, your words are very different, and the food items are very different as well, and how, what you refer to them as. So I wrote that with all of that in mind, and it's a really, really handy book, and it's small. It's sort of like the size of Food Lover's Companion.
Oh, okay. Wow. Okay.
And you can also get it in the e-version now, which is really, really wonderful.
Oh, I really need that. I'm trying to brush up on my Espanol.
Okay.
So that would be a great
and
fun
way. And there's pronunciations
way.
There, too. So the word and then how you pronounce it phonetically.
Yeah, I really screw those up, you know, big time, Lourdes. So I need to pick it. And the other one, Simply Mexican.
Right.
So is it more of a Tex-Mex or
no, it's about 60 iconic Mexican recipes. So you'll get just like fish tacos, or you'll get the quesadillas, or you'll get, now I'm at a blank, like some moles, you'll have carnitas, that kind of, the kind of things that, and almost to a degree, it's like backyard Mexican food, things that you'd want to cook for family and friends, that's just savory and really tasty, but the iconic recipes. So it's not really a regional book, and it's a great book if you want to start cooking Mexican food and just start getting your, you know, yourself, or gain a little experience with some of the new, with some of the ingredients that you might not be familiar with.
Cool. So Lourdes, tell folks who are listening how to find you. I know you're all over social media. Give folks the complete title of your latest book.
Well, I have a website, which is lourdes-castro.com, but I am on Twitter. Lourdes Castro is my, what is it, username or whatever it might be. And I guess that's it. Yeah,
you're on Facebook. You have
Facebook
a public
too.
Figure page on Facebook.
Wow, you've done your research.
Of course, of course. Okay. And your book, is it, I'm sure it's an ebook now.
It is, all my books are ebooks, and they're all on Amazon. And they can be linked through my website as well.
Cool, Lourdes. Thank you kindly for coming to the igloo. It's cold up in here,
it
right?
It is.
Come visiting us at Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. Look forward to talking to you soon.
Likewise. Thank you.
We're going to take a quick break and come back with the Hot Five.
Drums, please. Here it is, a groove slightly transformed, just a bit of a break from the norm, just a little something to break the monotony of all that hardcore dance that has gotten to be a little bit out of control. It's cool to dance, but what about a groove that moves romance? Give me a soft, subtle mix, and if it ain't broke, then don't try to fix it. And think of the summers of the past, adjust the bass and let the alpine blast. Pop in my CD and let me run around and put your car on.
Cheers to the beginning of summer, people. Today, I bring you the Summer Solstice edition of the Hot Five with the creators of Something I Ate. The Hot Five is a rundown of five things on fire in the good food movement. Influencers, farmers, celebrities, business owners, and chefs dish on their favorites. Before we give you the Caliente Cinco, Kat Papiel. You've screwed me up. You can laugh. It's okay. This is a fun. Look, my Spanish, my English is all screwed up.
International.
Exactly.
That's just as bad with names,
exactly.
Too.
Exactly.
I'm really bad
so
at
she's
names.
Laughing because she does it too. Yeah.
Sam Kim.
Woohoo! 5 stars.
Kat Papiel. Yeah. Welcome to High Grease, folks.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yes. So, what is Something I Ate?
Something IA is a food and art event series which provides a platform to connect creatives using food and art, food and drink as a vehicle. So it's more about the food and the drink than it is really about the art. Like we always say, we're not art curators, but we definitely want to invite all the creators we know within our community to showcase their talents. And Sam Kim is obviously an amazing chef. You know, it creates a special dish inspired by exclusive artworks they create for us, and we have a great event. So this July is our summer event,
and the first installment was this past
April.
Mm-hmm. And look, Sam, wow, this is deep. I didn't even know who you were. You know, I knew you, but I didn't know you. You are what? Name your kimchi company.
Skim Kim Foods.
Boom, 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 boom. Yeah. Smorgasbord every Saturday.
Every Saturday, Smorgasbord.
So here we go, y'all. The hot five things people should know before walking into an art event with a food focus. Number five on the hot five. What should people know?
Well, for us, every time we do an event, it's all about the space. The space is going to inform all the other sensory experiences that you're going to have. So
The space.
So this summer, we're actually going to be doing it at Kinfolk Studios, North 11th and Wythe in Williamsburg, which is a bar, restaurant, and multi-art use space. So definitely about introducing someone new into your lives.
So number five on the hot five is the space. So if you're listening, you're in the Midwest, you're in the South, you're on the West Coast. If you are going to a super cool art food event, if it's not in the right space,
out.
Okay. So number four on the summer solstice edition of the Hot Five.
We are pushing, it's a very multi-sensory event.
Multi-sensory.
We've got an amazing DJ and DJ Lloydski, who also hosts the Tiki Disco Party here on Sundays at Roberta's. We've got amazing music, obviously the food you can taste and smell, the artwork you obviously will see, but also, I mean, it's not just a regular art or food event where you walk in, have a glass of wine, look at the art, talk smack about it and leave.
So, you know, you have to help me out because, you know, cat. Pop yell. You know, she's already murdered me in her head about screwing up her name. So please tell me, multi-sensory. Okay, what's that? I know what that is, but give me some more.
All five senses.
All five
touch,
senses.
So
smell.
People, number four on our list, multi-sensory. If you are going to a summer art food event and they're not touching on all five things.
Yep. Walk out.
It's a walkout.
It should be an interactive experience. So people are busy.
Something I ate, and the date is what? You're going to have all five.
July 28th.
Oh, absolutely.
July 28th. All five.
Last time we had it in at Rouge 58 in Williamsburg, the menu that I created was based on all of the ideas and initial concepts that the artist came up with. So I came up with a menu based on that, and the installation was just this 30-foot long table in the middle, and I put the food straight on the table, and you had to like forage and dig and like really go for it.
Yeah, the pictures were absolutely gorgeous. I saw it was like featured on Food and Wine's blog.
Yeah, no, it's great. We didn't really push as much press, and we just got a great response, and all the creators that got involved were just very excited. So yeah, it's definitely something that we feel we've kind of touched upon. I mean, I feel like creatives are not really part of the foodie world. They're sort of, you know, they're not uninvited, but it's just a great way to sort of,
they're not putting the label on
exactly themselves. Yeah, I mean, sort of nice way to break the barriers, you know, all the sort of food events that you and I go to, it's sort of a very sort of isolated world, but
same,
you know,
people.
All these creative people, they make deals over cocktails and food, and they collaborate together, so this is sort of encompassing that.
Yeah, this brings everybody together.
So number three on the Something I Ate summer edition.
The artists and brands, that's sort of the content for the whole experience. So for us, you know, this summer we've got some great artists. We've got Velissa Yo, We Came in Peace, Kinfolk Studios, who's our host venue, will also be creating something amazing. Brian Hubble, Duffy Higgins, Chantel Martin, Charles Shaden. And then the brands, we've got some great sort of small purveyor brands from Brooklyn. Yeah, we definitely wanted to like take it a step up. So we've got Asahi, who's providing some beer for us. Roaming Acres, Landhouse Bacon, Ketonic, Art in the Age. So it's definitely about filling Ketonic. It with interesting stuff.
I bought two of their things the other day, but I haven't tried it yet. I'm excited.
They're amazing. The tonic's amazing. They just came out with a ginger ale, which is no ginger ale you've ever had.
It just tastes really fresh.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to have to try a Ketonic ginger ale because you know I'm a fan of another ginger ale. I haven't tried it yet. So number three on the Hot 5 Summer Solstice Edition, you have to have,
content.
Good content.
And you should be supporting new brands, and that's definitely what we're trying to do in this summer event.
Uh-huh. So number two on the Hot 5.
We do this seasonally. Something I Ate is seasonal. So last in April, I highlighted, spring seasonal ingredients. So this coming event, we'll definitely be highlighting local seasonal ingredients as well. Summer solstice centric.
Are we going to call this number two, maybe being consistent, having a theme, setting, being in line with the trends? I don't know what we're calling number two. We're just calling number two, we're going to have the hot
summer
there. Summer. Okay.
Yeah.
Ding, ding, summertime. Ding. Summertime.
Keep it simple.
Mm-hmm. And number one on the Hot 5.
You know what? I think probably music. I mean, we mentioned before we've got DJ Loyce. He's going to be providing us with the music, but at the end of the day, you know, if you're going to any kind of event, you've got to have fun. So we want people to eat, drink, just soak up what's around, meet new people, and music's always the best soundtrack for any of that kind of like community feel. So yeah, we want to have a party too.
party number one on the Hot 5. These are all things, if you're going to something at 8, or if you're going to an art and food event, or even if you're going to anything, a barbecue, anything, or grilling thing, all these five things folks should have, don't you agree?
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely.
Definitely.
So, website.
Follow us on Twitter at SomethingIAteNY, July 28th. See you there.
And let me ask you this. Is there a price? Is there a ticketed price for the...
Yes, we have tickets priced at $30. So the event is a few hours, and that involves all the food and drink and the chance to just be part of a really unique experience.
So listeners, if you're listening and you're in New York this weekend, July 28th?
No, July 28th, next month.
Next month.
That's it.
You got some time.
If you're in town for this weekend, come to Smorgasbord.
Oh, Smorgasbord. Yeah.
I will be there.
Sam Kim.
I got my vittles.
Go early, too, if you're going to go to Smorgasbord.
Oh, definitely.
And then talk to Sam, chat it up with her, come back on July 28th to their fabulous event. Ladies, thank you.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you kindly for checking us out.
Hot Grease.
On Hot Grease. Listeners. Thank you for listening, as always, to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. Join me here every Monday live at 3:30 Eastern Time. Until then, always take the road less traveled.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.
This is Behind the Scenes Food News with Katie Kiefer. In the wake of the massive E. coli outbreak in Germany, which was finally traced to organic sprouts, the editors of Food Safety News published an editorial suggesting that all sprouts should come with a warning label. The CDC, or Center for Disease Control, is echoing that sentiment, saying sprouts are not healthy food for everyone. Children, the elderly, and persons whose immune systems are not functioning well should not eat raw sprouts, because current treatment of seeds and sprouts cannot get rid of all the bacteria present. Persons who are at high risk for complications from foodborne illness should probably not eat raw sprouts, according to an article in the current issue of Emerging Infectious Diseases, CDC's peer-reviewed journal, which tracks new and re-emerging infectious diseases worldwide. Although sprouts are often considered a health food, the warm, humid conditions needed for growing sprouts from seeds are also ideal for bacteria to flourish. Salmonella, E. coli, and other bacteria can grow to high levels without affecting the appearance of the sprouts. Researchers have treated both seeds and sprouts with heat or washed them in solutions of chlorine, yum, alcohol, and other chemicals. Some of these disinfectants reduced the levels of bacteria, but a potential hazard remained, especially for persons with weak immune systems. That would be the elderly, children, pregnant women, etc. High temperatures that would kill the bacteria on the seeds would also keep them from sprouting. So until an effective way is found to prevent illness from sprouts, they really should be eaten with caution, if at all. And by the way, it's National Sprout Month. This is Behind the Scenes Food News with Katie Kiefer.
Check out a small clip from The Food Scene, hosted by Michael Harlan Turkel, a show where food and art intersect.
I think most recently you had a chocolate waterfall that had 5 tons of chocolate flowing, and you'd put on, what, a protective suit, walk through a waterfall, yeah, make your own chocolates within this kind of contained environment. And most recently, a rabbit cafe.
Yeah.
Can you explain that one to me a little bit?
Well, and this also slightly comes from jellies as well, because in England, everyone has these rabbit jelly molds. It's the most popular mold. Everyone goes, oh, I had rabbit jellies as a kid. And we've always been utterly bewildered by it. Why rabbit jellies? The only way to get to the bottom of it was to get a whole herd of rabbits, open a cafe with them, and have people touch rabbits and eat.
Yeah.
So it kind of has resonance with one of our favourite cookbooks, which we think an awful lot of modern chefs have. It's their dark secret under their pillow, which the future is.
Want to hear more? Well, tune into The Food Scene live every week, Tuesdays at 3 p.m., or you can find all the archive shows on our website or subscribe to the podcast in iTunes. Thanks for listening. The following is a public service announcement from Just Food. Help bring live chickens into food challenge communities through your donations to the Just Food City Chicken Project 2011. The City Chicken Project would not be possible without the volunteer hours, donations large and small, and the vibrant energy and ideas of the communities we work with. Just Food is a nonprofit organization that connects New York City communities and local and urban farmers with the resources and support they need to make fresh, locally grown food accessible to all. To donate, search on Kickstarter.com for Just Food and find their City Chicken Project. For more information on Just Food, visit justfood.org or call 212-645-9880. That's 212-645-9880. Let's keep making New York City a better place to live and eat. The following is a message from HeritageFoodsUSA.com. The difference between wild Alaskan salmon and farmed Atlantic salmon is just as great as the differences between commodity pork and heritage breed pork. Huge! HeritageFoodsUSA.com is lining up a major social buy of sustainably harvested salmon in July and offering it at a phenomenal price to consumers. Check out HeritageFoodsUSA.com for more details on how to get in on this opportunity. Experience salmon the way it should be.